Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. When the Missouri legislative session ended Friday, it was widely characterized as sometimes chaotic and contentious. It came as something of a surprise to those who expected a political love fest between the Republican legislative supermajority and the new Republican governor. That turned out not to be the case. It was also not nearly as productive as expected, leaving controversial bills in the legislative hopper. What does it all mean? St. Louis Public Radio reporters Joe Manis, Jason Rosenbaum, and State House reporter Marshall Griffin have had a few days to digest the session and its results. They join me now for a closer look. Thank you all so much for being with us today.
Yeah, well, thanks for asking me.
Thank you.
Let me begin with a very short clip from our governor with one of the more memorable quotes, I think, following the session. This was in the news conference following the session. Let's listen to the kind of grade that he gave it.
If you say, what's the grade that I'd give the legislature? Frankly, sometimes it looked like third grade.
Well, there we go. Short and sweet. Marshall, let me ask you to characterize the session and what the governor had to say.
Well, I would say... I'm not sure I can give it a grade, but I will say that there are a lot of growing pains evident. Everybody went into this session thinking this had the potential to be a very productive session because you had GOP majorities in both the House and the Senate and a governor of the same party in the governor's office, and just watch out and see what happens. And there was the thought that, well, there might be some hiccups along the way, but it turns out there was a lot of hiccups, a lot of infighting, especially towards the end of session, and then what we saw going on between a new Missouri and the ads against Senator Rob Schaff really pointed to a lot of discord among the GOP.
Well, Joe, he mentioned hiccups, maybe indigestion more like
it. Yeah, well, just to put it in a little bit of historical perspective, I was looking back over the last 10 years. Frankly, having filibusters, having the Senate bogged down and stuff the last week is not new. Frankly, it's become almost typical. Mm-hmm. And so from that standpoint, there wasn't a lot of stuff that was stunning the last week. The most stunning things, frankly, were the things that weren't discussed. Two issues that often... bring up stuff the last couple of weeks, abortion and guns. While there were issues on those fronts, bills on those fronts, most of those didn't pass. They got kind of waylaid by all these other issues. So you didn't have – I mean, the fights that were the last week really were on substantive issues of policy, not the social issues that often really get emotions going, with the exception of SB 43, which is the anti-discrimination legislation, which will make it more difficult for someone to sue claiming discrimination. While that's policy, that also does create a lot more emotion, and one could say almost is a social issue as well.
If he signs it being a key term at the moment. Jason, your take?
Well, I would agree with Joe that it's not unusual for tensions to rise in the last week of the session or for the Senate to become mired in procedural dysfunction. I will just say this is year 11 of my professional career. I've been to many last week of sessions, and I've never seen the Senate devolve into what it devolved on Friday. It was an absolute chaotic spectacle. Seeing what happened when they used a motion to kill debate on a bill nullifying St. Louis and Kansas City's minimum wage increase. On that note, though, I would push back against people that said that nothing was done or nothing substantial was done this session just because only about 55 non-budget bills were passed. I would say that passing the bill that Joe mentioned dealing with employment discrimination, other restrictions on lawsuits – the right to work, which is shorthand for a ban on requiring employers and unions to require dues as a condition for employment. Those are major policy issues that are going to affect a lot of people. And the fact that they didn't do everything on the GOP agenda in the first year may actually be a good thing, because Joe and I both remember what happened in 2005 when they basically did pass everything on the Republican wish list. And then 3 years afterward, Republicans in the legislature devolved into even worse infighting than we're seeing now. So sometimes there is a benefit to not doing everything at once.
Well, and I think people sometimes get caught up in the numbers And for the, I would say for the Republicans and the Democrats for some to some degree, they would see this session as one dealing with quantity versus quality. So for the Republicans, they would say that, okay, we passed fewer bills, but they were quality. I mean, from their perspective, bringing up the stuff that Jason just mentioned. For the Democrats, you had the Democratic leaders on Friday saying, well, we stopped a bunch of stuff, and that actually, if we'd had more bills, it would have even been more chaotic. So from that standpoint, I think both sides, they're not as hung up on the numbers as maybe some people on the outside who are just looking at, oh, 100 bills passed last year, only, you know, 70, including the budget, passed this year. That's really not what the average person really cares about. They want to know what passed.
Well, the next question, I guess, becomes in view of the fact there were a few things left on the table that were getting a lot of attention but didn't pass. Is there going to be a special session? I'll ask each of you, but start with Marshall. What do you think, Marshall? Is he going to call a special session?
Probably, but I can't say with 100% certainty that he will. Probably one of the biggest things that did not make it out was a statewide prescription drug monitoring program, which is something that Governor Greitens wants. And they were very close to getting it. Support started to erode away in the House just before, but I got the impression that if there had been one more week left in session, that maybe they could have pulled it out and gotten it to the governor's desk. So that might be one that would come up. But I can't say with 100% certainty, but I would say 75 to 80% certain that sometime this year there will be a special session.
Joe?
Well, one thing that people need to realize is that the governor has to limit the special session to certain topics. So it's not like you can just bring the General Assembly back and have a free-for-all on five or six things you want or more. He's going to have to say it's for this, it's for this, it's for this. And so while he may do it for prescription drugs, as the, let's say, the next few days, next week or two, as he talks to people, because this is his first year, his first session, he wasn't in government before, he may be hearing from some people who tell him, you know, just wait. Do this in the next session in January. That's going to be an election year in 2018. While Greitens won't be on the ballot, a lot of Republicans will, that maybe you should wait and tee up all this stuff then. So he might call one to do a couple things, like the opioid bill, maybe prevailing wage, because he really wanted that through, to get rid of it. But he may not. After he talks to people, they may tell him, you know, just wait till January and really push it.
Jason, you were already making plans to cover a special session off air.
Yeah, I think the chances are very high, not only for the prescription drug monitoring database or maybe some other bills aimed at curbing the power of labor unions, but a sleeper issue may be a piece of legislation aimed at reopening the aluminum factory in southeast Missouri. I actually happened to wander onto the House floor when Representative Don Roan of Crothersville was making this really impassioned speech that everybody on the House floor was silent for. Joe, I think you were in the chamber too.
Yes.
And
I recorded it.
I'll be honest, I don't really know the intricate particulars of it, but it would basically, I think, set up a special electrical rate that's lower so it could operate. And I think that, yeah, Joe was about to chime in about that.
Yeah, because I've covered that before. I actually did a big piece on Noranda a couple years ago, which is the Missouri has one of the few remaining aluminum smelter operations in the country. Of course, now it's closed. But a lot of that is because, to hear business people, it's because China has sent so much aluminum over here and that it's made it not economical to operate here. But there's New York. Business in New York was proposing to move a bunch, about 500 jobs over. So the point being that that's the kind of thing that has really affects people's lives in southeast Missouri.
Yeah.
And the governor might get pressure to put something together for a special session. But again, it might be something that they want to actually craft something that's more specific and get it in 2018. Because frankly, for Republicans, it's going to be key for them to energize their base in 2018.
Yeah, so I think it might be issues that we may not have been at the top of mind at the beginning of session, but may be able to get the consensus necessary in a special session.
And if I can throw something in, that is key, is making sure you have a consensus that this thing will pass if you call a special session. You may remember what happened in 2011 when there was a special session over Aerotropolis, and that thing dragged on for 2 months, and that special session fell apart.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. And there was this. The consensus hadn't been gotten. You know, Governor Nixon called it into session. A few Republican leaders on each side said, yes, we've agreed to this. But then some other Republicans started speaking up and says, we never agreed to this. There's no consensus here. And that special session sunk.
Marshall, how did the governor come out of this session?
Governor Greitens.
He claims it was one of the great, one of the most successful starts for conservatives in at least a decade.
Well, if you count right to work, then yes. I mean, that was the most important issue for Republicans in all three areas: the governor's office, the House, and the Senate. And they did get that done, and they got a few other things done as well. So it's the whole quality over quantity argument might come into play there. But the way that that Greitens handled relating to members of his own party. Reports of being kind of strong arming or trying to strong arm fellow Republicans to vote the way he wanted them to. That might take a fairly sizable hit on his reputation, and of course, not to mention the a new Missouri ads against Rob Schaaf, and also hints that there might be other fellow Republicans targeted in such ads.
I heard him say that statement about it's the most successful start to conservative administration history, and I had to wonder whether Matt Blunt's was more bountiful. As I mentioned before, they passed a whole lot of things in that first session that were pretty substantial policy-wise.
And they really cut the Medicaid rolls in 2005.
And you could argue that it was more individual substantial things than this one, but I think Joe wants to chime in as well.
Yeah, one thing, because Marshall's mentioned this already, just to explain to our listeners, when he's talking about a new Missouri, that is Governor Greitens, a nonprofit organization that can accept money from unlimited amounts and from unknown donors. Now, technically, he says he doesn't have much to do with it, but the guys running it are people who are in his office half the time. So, and that nonprofit organization, which some other governors have, but he's the first Missouri governor to actually use it on political stuff like this. And he used it to run ads against various state senators. Schaaf was the most notable, but they ran some ads against a handful of others. And I think that created some ill will in the Senate, even among some who maybe have been sympathetic with the governor on some issues. So it may have hurt him that last week, which may have been one of the reasons why I was hearing reports that he actually had private meetings a couple evenings during that last week with certain key legislators, especially on the Senate side, to kind of, let's say, smooth things over a little bit.
Right. I have to take a break, but let's get some reaction to what Joe was just talking about from Senator Scott Sifton from Afton. Here are his comments.
It's pretty audacious to be taking unlimited dark money, not telling anybody who's paying for the ads, and then complaining about people not passing ethics reform. That's pretty gutsy.
Well, we'll come back in a moment and talk about ethics and about that comment, and we'll do that in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Joe, Jason, and Marshall. You're both reacting here in studio to Scott Sifton.
Yeah, I was, because I have heard the sentiment several times that a new Missouri, which Joe was talking about before the break, really hurt efforts to ban lobbyist-paid meals, entertainment, and travel. And I think there's some truth to that, but I think we have to be honest with ourselves. If you look back at the debate over that exact issue last year, you saw senators from both parties raising objections to banning lobbyist gifts. And some people had problems with the way the proposal was crafted, but truthfully, a lot of senators like taking lobbyist gifts, and it's evident from when you look at their reports that they often take more lobbyist gifts than state representatives. So I think that that context needs to be placed when talking about this, because I've heard a lot of people saying Greitens' nonprofit killed that proposal, when in actuality it was an uphill battle, and it does raise questions about whether Greitens should have made it a priority in the first place.
Just to point out, a lot of the legislators like the lobbyist gifts. A lot of the people who elect them don't.
Yeah. I mean, in some cases, I'm not minimizing it, but like it's, for example, the pie. They always have pie day the last week of the session. That's usually like
And nobody's arguing the Missouri Truckers Association is gaining much of an advantage by doing that, unless they think that people will be persuaded by a delectable pie. But
yeah,
continue, Joe.
Yeah, because, I mean, they have tables and tables of slices of pie. But I think that you've got – and legislators get Cardinals tickets. They get stuff like that. I'm not minimizing it, but I'm just saying when they're looking at this and then they see the governor taking, you know, unlimited amounts of money and they don't even know who, and he's running these ads against them, it, I think, poisoned the atmosphere a little bit. I mean, but Jason's right. This had an uphill battle to begin with on certain things. The House Speaker, Todd Richardson, has made ethics reform a key part of his platform for several years, ever since the last speaker had to step down because of sexual improprieties or perceived.
But is there any link between what happened with John Deal and those sexual improprieties and lobbyist gifts?
No, but some people lobbed it all together. Kind of, it became, oh, well, look at legislators. Look at all this stuff they're doing. Because it just makes them look bad. You know, it was all thrown in.
Because I've never really gotten a clear connection between the two things. And I think that's been a problem throughout this entire discussion.
I think it shows that a lot of people think that lawmakers have a sense of entitlement.
Yes.
Yeah, we have a number of questions from listeners, and there are certainly a lot of questions to be raised with this session. Let's get a couple of these in quickly so that they can feel like they've participated. Rosemary writes, we did pass the Real ID bill. That was passed. If so, what do I need to do to upgrade my present license since it does not expire for some time, for another couple of years? Is that in the bill?
Well, the way it's kind of general, but it's basically authorizing the Department of Revenue to come up with procedures. The bottom line is, assuming that the governor signs it, and it's probably guaranteed he will, we're going to have a two-tier driver's license system in Missouri. You can either get it with or without. And so I think it'll take them a while, probably just to kind of get that set in motion. I think that some of the behind-the-scenes talk I heard was that they're hoping that the federal government, since they know this has been passed and signed, see, this is supposed to go into effect in January. Where that they might give the state a few more months or a year leeway to kind of get this going. So that's what you're going to be seeing in the next year or two. So it may take a little while. So in other words, if you're getting ready to fly in January, you may want to take your passport as well, even if you're going to do an interior flight, just to be on the safe side.
Not everybody has a passport.
I know.
And they're expensive.
And that came up during the debate because people were pointing out that passports cost several hundred dollars. And there were businesses who were explaining how they were losing federal contracts because their staff people did not have the real ID. And so they couldn't fly and be in these federal facilities to work on these projects. I mean, a lot of this came up during the debate last week.
We have another email from Robert who writes, can you tell me if the legislature has retained or renewed the tax credit for historical property renovations?
They didn't even touch that issue this year because Governor Greitens created a commission looking at tax credits. I will say that signals, since the commission's report doesn't come out until June, I think that pretty much took the issue off the table for this year. Next year, though, I expect a pretty robust debate on curtailing both the historic preservation tax credit and the low-income housing tax credit. And there will be tremendous pushback to curb both of those credits from ordinary people, from banks, developers, city officials in St. Louis and Kansas City. But I do think that there are a lot of people, mainly Republicans, that feel that those credits are inefficient and they need to have a pretty strong debate over curtailing them.
Yeah, because they cost the state about $600 million a year in income.
That all?
Roughly.
$600 million. Here's one for Marshall. Can you discuss the political implications of a blue alert system, which is kind of an amber alert system for police officers who are under assault, and its potential to embolden vigilantes and endanger citizens? Marshall, much discussion along those lines during the session?
The emboldened vigilantes portion didn't get a whole lot of discussion on the floor, but I think the perception there's two perceptions among the detractors from creating a blue alert system. Number one was whether it would embolden vigilantes to go out and shoot somebody that either is the suspect or who looks like the suspect in a blue alert system. And the other perspective was, well, how much good will this really do? And other than making Governor Greitens or making the lawmakers who supported this look really good when it's time to come up for reelection.
I just want to make this point, and I don't want to overly personalize it, but Sergeant Lake was shot maybe two blocks away from my house in St. Louis Hills. And I thank God he survived, and I was able to shake his hand and interview him a few months ago. I will just let you know that when he was shot, I knew about that within like 5 or 10 minutes through either Twitter or through news reports. And I do think the fact that if a sentence isn't put in the blue alert saying, if you see this person, call police, it may give people who are not as nuanced about doing that with or without prompting the possibility they may take the law into their own hands. I think that is a real concern. But proponents say, especially in rural areas where there isn't the news media apparatus we have here, it may provide people with a heads up on looking for somebody.
Yeah, it sort of became rather touchy because from the legislative standpoint, there really weren't any major legislators who were opposed to the blue alert system. But it sort of got caught up in this. There's a bill that did not pass, which is the so-called paycheck protection, which basically would have dealt with public employees and would have required them to authorize every year to have their dues taken out of their paycheck. Mm-hmm. Well, the issue was whether or not a couple years ago one came up and they were going to exempt police and fire. And so some of this, now the bill ended up dying with everything else, but some of them were like, well, police were paying attention to that because the police organizations were against being included in the prevailing wage stuff. So at the same time, you've got this feel-good blue alert stuff out there. So I thought that was intriguing because they had their lobbyists there watching to make sure this other thing didn't happen. So my point being that I'm not sure. I think the blue alert may have been aimed in part of appealing to police saying we're all for you.
But Jason, is there any way the blocking of the minimum wage in the city of St. Louis is not going to go to court?
You know, I've thought about that. And, you know, there was a bill that I often cite all the time that dissolved St. Louis and St. Louis County's foreclosure mediation ordinances that passed in, I think, 2013. And that basically did exactly what this minimum wage bill is doing, which is basically passing a state law that makes it illegal for cities to raise their minimum wage and abolishing the other ones. And I don't recall there being litigation over that foreclosure mediation ordinance, maybe because, you know, saving that was not a priority for people because banks and realtors were very much against that idea. And therefore, lots more legislators supported getting rid of it, whereas minimum wage, increasing it, is kind of a Democratic issue. You may say – I don't want to say it's a wedge issue, but it's kind of an issue that's used in political campaigns to stoke turnout. So there might be a lawsuit, but I'm not sure if it's going to be successful because I do think it has been pretty established that the state can pass legislation that dictates what local jurisdictions can do. But I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to make any predictions.
Yeah, but if you look at the state Supreme Court decision right in February, on something similar. I think it's guaranteed that there's going to be a suit, and that whether or not it's successful, it's going to whip up political sentiments on both sides. And the fact that the opponents were able to block an emergency clause, which would have meant that this ban would have gone into effect as soon as the governor signed it, by one vote, they couldn't get that through the House. So as a result, workers in the city of St. Louis will still affected by the higher minimum wage, will still be able to collect it at least until late August.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, though. The reason the initial law was struck down was because of multiple subjects. And I don't think that this has multiple subject problems.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, you know, regardless of the technical parts, there's going to be the lawsuit, if nothing else, just to whip up people on both sides.
Sure.
And so as it goes through the courts, which means it wouldn't be decided probably until next year, 2018. Yeah, right. So that's my point. It's not just the legal fight. It's also the political fight.
Let me change subjects because time's getting in the way. And I want to – Marshall can answer this question. It's going to be raised by Scott, who is calling us from Chesterfield. Scott, go ahead, but make it quick, if you would, please.
Yeah. How many hospitals, rural hospitals, have closed or are in danger of closing because Missouri hasn't expanded Medicaid? And also, can I conceal carry without any training at all here in Missouri?
Let's get some answers. Marshall, I thought I'd turn that to you because we can just discuss briefly the status of Medicaid in the legislature this past session.
Well, I'm afraid I don't know the answer as far as how many hospitals are set to close.
I think it's been 40, Joe, 40, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it's been several.
It's been a good many, but yeah. Let's pass on that and go to Medicaid.
Yeah, Medicaid expansion is pretty much dead. The only way that could ever get through is Missouri is if the Democrats were to suddenly, you know, catch fire and were to become the majority party again, and that's not happening anytime soon. It might not even happen in my lifetime. You know, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that House Speaker Todd Richardson mentioned at his closing press conference on Friday was the need to curb, which is revamp Medicaid, because they believe it's costing the state too much money now. So if anything, you're probably going to see some measures in the 2018 session about ways to curb the cost. So expansion isn't on their plate. Curbing the cost is, which means there could be more cuts coming.
It's just always interesting to me how Republicans now criticize the way Medicaid is, because the Republicans were the people that revamped Medicaid in 2007. So I guess that overhaul didn't work in many respects.
Yeah, he also asked about concealed carry. And
that was last year. I believe that the legislation that the caller may have been referring to basically took away a lot of training requirements in some respects.
Yeah. You can – yes. In effect, you can carry a weapon in this state.
Yeah. Limited time left. I just want to ask about sanctuary cities, because that's something that has come up here in the city of St. Louis. It was raised with regard to abortion. I'm thinking in terms of immigration. What is that?
I just want to make it very clear that Missouri banned sanctuary cities in 2008. And the sponsor of that, Senator Bob Onder of Lake St. Louis, made it pretty clear that there's no danger of any cities becoming a sanctuary city because of that law. And I remember that debate very well. The immigration bill that then Representative Onder sponsored was not like a fluff bill. It actually had some teeth to it. And there was an amendment to ban sanctuary cities again. And they may have made an argument that it was stronger language. But frankly, it seemed duplicative given the current law.
Yeah, that did get through. And they say that this just stiffens the state's stuff. This has to do with immigration. The abortion one died.
We've only got a very short time left. Is it, Marshall, anything you want to add that we should have talked about but time didn't allow it? Very quickly.
Just that at this point, it's just we begin the watch of which bills the governor will sign, if there's any he might actually consider vetoing at this point, and also how he handles his first state budget once it comes time to sign and make withholds and line item vetoes, just exactly how he'll handle that.
Well, plenty to keep you busy for through the summer and beyond, Marshall. Thank you. Thank you so much. We've got to wrap it up right now. I want to thank you both, Jason Rosenbaum and Joe Madison, of course, Marshall Griffin, for being with us and for the good work that you did throughout the time of the legislature was in session. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.